Hello, I am Joshua P. Warren, and this is Joshua P. Warren Daily. Yes, I'm alive. I made it back from the desert. And now I am ready to therefore tell you about my secret trip, my secret mission. Of course, I am here at my new condo in Las Vegas. And I decided to take a trip north to Area 51, stopping occasionally along the way to go out into the desert and take measurements using a variety of scientific instruments so that I could see just how weird things might get as I got closer to Area 51, a place I've never been before. I've done a lot of work in Roswell, New Mexico, and people often confuse Roswell with Area 51, but this is my first trip to Area 51 in Nevada. But the primary goal of the trip was, well, for me to be the very first person in history to use technology that can document the distortion of space-time so that I could see if it's possible that time and space actually do distort as you get closer to Area 51, since there have been rumors for decades about the back engineering of exotic technology there, which is using gravity waves and, you know, gravity warping type propulsion systems that would also alter space time and create ripples and that sort of thing. And you know, I have a new toy, a new piece of equipment, and I'm going to tell you more about this in an upcoming podcast when I have more explicit permission to tell you one thing or another from the creator of this device. He is an engineer in California, but it's called the DT meter. It is the differential time rate meter. And he created it, and I'm one of the first people in the world to have one. And so I'm certainly one of the first people to experiment with one. And the idea is that you have a meter, and then it's connected to a 100-foot cable, and on the other end of that cable is a sensor. And that sensor is constantly sending a signal back to the meter. And if everything is going normally, there's a display on the meter that will say 0.00000, and that means that the signal's traveling at the rate that it should through time. But if time slows down or speeds up a little bit, then the meter will show you that, and it can give you a reliable reading of any change as small as 1/100,000th of a second. So if you take a second and you slice it into 100,000 little pieces, this can detect if one of those little pieces changes. It can actually detect on an even more subtle level than that, much more subtle level. But when you get to that level, you get so subtle that it starts picking up its, you know, background noise and things created by the electronics. So, to my knowledge, I was the first person to travel from Las Vegas to Area 51, stopping to test time-space along the way to see if it distorts a little bit as you get closer to this massive facility where they are supposedly manipulating time, space, gravity, using these types of exotic systems. Now, I'm presuming that if you listen to this podcast, you're familiar with Area 51. If not, I will just tell you that it is a secret, quote-unquote secret, because we know it's there, but it's a classified United States military base in Nevada that is in the middle of friggin' nowhere. And nobody knows exactly what its official name is. It's part of an area called Groom Lake. Some people say that it's called Homey Air Force Base. Some people say that It's called Dreamland. In fact, if you're a commercial airplane pilot and you get close to the restricted air zone, then their air traffic radio tower will come on and warn you to turn around, and they identify themselves as Dreamland. But apparently that spot where they built this base, which I believe was in the 1950s, that spot is a dried up lake bed, and that lake was called Groom Lake, so that's sort of the more general name for it is Groom Lake. But Bob Lazar, in particular, was one of the whistleblowers who claimed that he worked there and worked on back engineering crashed and retrieved saucer-shaped UFOs, that they had alien bodies there, all the kind of stuff that was popularized in the movie Independence Day. So anyway, the idea was that Lauren and I, together, just the two of us, would jump into our SUV loaded down with equipment and drive to Area 51. Now, if you were just to drive directly from Las Vegas to the location, and the nearest town is called Rachel, Nevada. The official population is 54 people, and there is a little tourist trap there called the Little Ailey Inn, which is a bar and diner, and it's got some trailers in the back where you can stay overnight if you want to share a bathroom with other people. It's that kind of setup. And in fact, a lot of people, well, I wouldn't say a lot of people, but there are enough people to keep them in business who just go there as tourists. For example, recently, investigators Shelley Wright and Patricia DeMint, they went up there and they just drove up there and stayed at the Little Ailey Inn and they came back. Now, if you just drive up there, well, it's about 160 miles and it'll take you, well, let's see. It's supposed to take you, and I brought up the directions here, it's supposed to take you 2 hours and 40 minutes. But it takes a lot longer when you're stopping, as we were, approximately every 30 miles. And what we would do is we'd drive 30 miles, we'd get out and we'd stop in the desert, and then we'd walk out into the desert and we'd take all these tests. Then we'd get back in the car and we'd drive about another 30 miles and so on. And I would log everything with great precision. And I want to explain something to you about the drive between Las Vegas and Area 51. Las Vegas is one of the most hoppin' happening places on the planet, right? It's one of the most famous cities on Earth. Everybody knows Las Vegas. And yet, don't be fooled. If you get just not too far outside of Las Vegas, I mean, 20 miles, something like that, there ain't shit! There's not shit. It's just desert as far as the eye can see. Lauren says it looks like a Wile E. Coyote cartoon, and we have pictures to prove that. Roads that just go on as far as the eye can see, the straightest roads you've ever seen, that just, it's like a vanishing point in the distance, and you see the shimmer of the heat as it comes up off the roadway. And there was at one point there was a road sign. I wish that we'd taken a picture of it, but Lauren was my driver and she was hauling ass, so I couldn't get a picture in time. But there was a sign that said, "Next gas station, 73 miles." So before you go off on trips like this, you have to realize something, okay? In the desert, you're talking about you can drive for, an hour and not see a damn thing. Okay, not even a gas station. You don't see anything. You might only pass two or three cars. You don't have a cell phone signal. If your car breaks down, you're at the mercy of the elements and whoever happens to drive by. And yeah, you get out there. Well, yeah, the first thing you could do is you could dehydrate or whatever, so obviously you bring food and a lot of water and all that just in case something goes wrong. But furthermore, I guess, well, and yeah, there are mountain lions and the coyotes and rattlesnakes and scorpions and all that kind of stuff. But the biggest threat is just weirdos, you know, that you are out in the middle of nowhere on the side of the road and nobody's around. And then a car comes and creeps and rolls in, and you're like, oh, God, who's this person going to be? So, look, we were prepared as best as we could be. I had a lot of food, water, weapons. I had multiple hotspots with different carriers to increase my chances of getting a signal if something happened. I mean, you know, we went through all the survival stuff. And then we drove. We drove north, and it took us quite a while when you stop every 30 minutes. And I would get out, and the first thing I would do is I would take the differential time rate meter, the DT meter, and we'd roll that cable out into the desert, and we'd let it sit there for a while, and we'd take a measurement and see if time and space seemed to be distorting at all. And if so, what was happening? Is it speeding up? Is it slowing down? I had Geiger counters. I'd go out and I'd put them in the dust. And I had two different Geiger counters to give me two different types of readings I could compare, two different levels of sensitivity. I'd test the dust. I had a tri-field natural EM meter model number 2, which picks up radio and microwave, but it's even more sensitive because you can plug a coil external antenna into it. Look, I could go on and on. Of course, I had my third generation night vision goggles, all right? My paratemporal night vision goggles. If you've never been to paratemporal.com, P-A-R-A, paratemporal.com. You need to go there and check out some of the images and some of the footage. So I had all kinds of goodies, all right? It's been a while since anybody did something like this. And let me tell you, even if you have seen something that looks similar to this on TV, it's bullshit. This was not a TV show. This was a real research project, a real scientific endeavor to go out, and I logged everything with as much detail as possible. So what do you think happened when we made our way from Las Vegas, stopping along the way, getting out into the desert, working our way to Area 51? Well, let me tell you a few things. For one thing, Area 51, okay, so here, basically, if you drive north from Las Vegas, there's only one big-ass road that will take you most of the way, and then you reach this little town called Alamo, and Alamo only has, I think, a gas station. It's got a few little motels and a diner, and that's it, and you drive past Alamo, and you go through Ash Springs and Crystal Springs, which are more or less little neighborhoods, little communities, whatever. And then you hang a left, and you end up shortly on State Route 375, what they call the Extraterrestrial Highway. And they call it, and there's a sign there. This is Extraterrestrial Highway. They call it that because it runs parallel to this giant piece of government land, which is Groom Lake, which includes Area 51, and Area 51 supposedly includes this little area called S4, which is where they actually test alien stuff, because they do all kinds of stuff there. I mean, it's a real no bullshit, you know, military base with, I'm sure, gigantic hangars and tunnels and things under the ground. I mean, like, for example, every day, well, maybe not every day, at least 5 days a week, there are flights that go out of Las Vegas to carry workers there to Area 51 and back. The big airport here in Las Vegas is called the McCarran International Airport, and there's a section of it that's off limits to the general public, and they have what are called Janet flights. And these are airplanes that are white with a red stripe. That's the only way to identify them. And so at least 5 days a week, you have over 1,000, maybe even thousands of people who show up in the morning. They drive there, they park their car, they get out, they get on the plane, and they're flown to Area 51, and they work. And then that evening, 5, 6, 7 o'clock, they fly back every workday. That's just their regular workday. So most of the people who work at Area 51, we presume, work or live here in Las Vegas. I'm sure there are people who actually live at the base, and then there are also some kinds of tasks that are given to people who are local. And by local, I mean you live around Rachel or Alamo. So you drive past this big, huge area on your left as you're going down the extraterrestrial highway where so many people have seen UFOs. And finally, you hit Rachel. And Rachel, I mean, I'm telling you, you blink, you miss it. You blink, you miss it. And you've got the little alien there. And there's not much more to it. I mean, there are some houses strewn around here and there in the distance, and they grow some alfalfa. I don't know why anybody would want to live out there. I mean, I talked to plenty of the locals, and they just, you know, one of them told me outright, I hate people. And once a week, though, once a week, he has to drive to Las Vegas to get anything, you know, get groceries and just regular stuff. So he hates that. Little Alien was quirky, was quaint. You know, it's got various memorabilia and little touristy things you can buy. I had a really good rap, and let me tell you something. They got a damn full liquor bar there. I mean, those people, they're probably half lit all the time. Got a good bar there. What a dusty life they live out there in the middle of nowhere. And you know, when you're driving, talk about dust. There are dust devils that kick up everywhere. They're like gigantic tornadoes of dust that just ascend up into the heavens. The dust there is so fine. Alarn described it as being finer than powdered sugar. And being out, even after being out there for a few days, I still... excuse me, I still get a little dried out. You know, my throat's dry, my eyes burn. I mean, there's no telling the dust that you just inhale for a few days while you're out there. Clouds of dust come when somebody's speeding across the road if they're off the pavement. So anyway, we went out there and... after we ate at the Little Alien, then we decided to drive past Rachel. And if you drive past Rachel, then the next gas station you're going to find is 100 and some miles away in Tonopah. So that's just another stretch of nothingness that goes on and on and on. And so we didn't drive but about 10 or 11 miles past Rachel. And then I got out and I took another measurement there. And then after that, it started getting good and dark, and so we drove back toward Rachel and back toward Area 51, where we found a good place to park and stake out Area 51 at night with all the equipment, including the night vision goggles. And by the way, yes... there are a couple entrances to Area 51, and yes, you can see the checkpoint where the guards are there and the signs are there, and it says, you know, don't cross this threshold, deadly force authorized. They've got sensors all over the place. They've got motion sensors in the desert. They have got microphones in the desert. They have some devices that can supposedly pick up the amount of ammonia in your sweat as you walk through the heat, so they can tell the difference between a human and an animal and all that. And I did not tempt fate by going right up to the checkpoint and badgering those guys. I talked to people who did, and most of them were like literally families that were on some kind of wacky out west vacation. So, you know, it's one thing if it's mom, dad, and two kids, and you go up and you pass the sign and go, ooh, what's going to happen? And then, you know, the white vans come out and they're like, no, turn around. You know, that's one thing. Me, a little different, okay? I'm a middle-aged guy in my own SUV that's loaded down with very strange and suspicious-looking expensive equipment poking around the base. So it would be stupid for me to go up and try to cross and, you know, some threshold and try to mess with these guys. Like, what's the point? For one thing, I respect what they do. I respect that it is a real military installation, and I don't want to waste their time. But beyond that, I mean, all you have to do is go up there and get a little too close, and if they want to, they can come out and confiscate all of your stuff, and I have very expensive equipment. They can impound your car and just throw you in jail for a night to teach you a lesson. And so I was not about to take that risk. So, I mean, I would, like I said, I could see the areas that I wasn't supposed to cross, and I respected it. And so, because my goal was not to go there and come out with some daring story. You know, I'm not like some kind of Alex Jones rebel rouser. All right, I'm not here to cause any waves, any problems. I'm just here to take data and stay within my rights as a free civilian. And so, I was prepared, however, if I accidentally crossed some boundary or whatever and I got in trouble. I do fortunately have a lot of friends who are very high up in U.S. government, and I can tell you what, I had all their numbers and names on hand just in case something happened. But I was, I think, wise and smart about how I handled things, and again, very respectful, so I didn't have any problems. So anyway, went on this big trip, took all these different measurements, stayed out late with the night vision, then drove back to Alamo, where we spent the night, and then from then the next day we got up and we drove back to Las Vegas. Now, would you like to know my results? Would you like to know what I found? Of course you would. I'm not ready to tell you my results, but I sure as hell got some. But before I get to that, let me just mention, I thought it was really odd, really odd, that I did this on Monday. So on Monday, here I am, surrounded the whole day, the whole night, by all this, like, you know, government, military, conspiracy, space stuff, and then I get to the motel there in Alamo, Nevada, and I finally had some Wi-Fi, and I checked the Wi-Fi, I connected the Wi-Fi, and I checked my email and all that, and here is this story about Donald Trump, President Trump, announcing the creation of a new branch of the military called the Space Force. So just like we have the Air Force, now we're going to have the Space Force. Here's the actual article, the first one that I saw, and I think it was Mobius who posted this first on the Joshua P. Warren Daily podcast Facebook page. It says, President Donald Trump announced Monday He is directing the Pentagon to create a new Space Force as an independent military service branch aimed at ensuring American supremacy in space. Goes on to say, here's a quote. Quote by Trump. When it comes to defending America, it is not enough to merely have an American presence in space. We must have American dominance in space. We are going to have the Air Force, and we are going to have the Space Force. Separate but equal. End quote. And at that point, says he turned to seek out Marine General Joseph Dunford, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And then Trump said, General Dunford, if you would carry that assignment out, I would be very greatly honored. So isn't that interesting? Like, put yourself in my position. Here you have been, again, all day and all night around this base that is more than any other base associated with outer space and aliens and UFOs and all this stuff. And then you come back to your motel room that night, still in the middle of nowhere in the desert, and the first thing you see is this story about the President of the United States creating a new branch of the military called the Space Force. Isn't that some pretty crazy shit? I mean, really, think about that. So I think that everything related to Area 51 is probably about to change. It's about to become even more significant than it was before. And yes, granted, I know that there are other places where research is being done. There's a place they call Area 52 now in Utah and so on. You know, people are always going to figure out where the bases are. But Area 51 is just a beautifully, naturally barricaded base. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's surrounded by extremely rugged, almost impenetrable mountains. It's just like the perfect site for them to carry out operations. So I think that it was a really historic day for us to be running around Area 51 and taking all these measurements. Now, the only reason that I'm not going to tell you all of my results right now is because this is an important project, and it takes time. It takes time to process your results. So I'm taking the data that I got. I've already contacted the gentleman who created the DT meter that detects distortion of space-time. I've sent my data to him, because I want to make sure I have a good, solid opinion, a second opinion from the guy who created the instrument before I come forth with what I found. I videotaped everything, so I'm going to put a video together. And I discovered some other things that are of an even deeper historic significance. And obviously, I was out there at night with some great paratemporal.com third gen, and yes, I did capture some very interesting things flying around Area 51 at night. So it's going to take me some time to put this together, but that's my top project now. It's my top project, and so over the next couple days, I'm hoping to put all this together in one spot, so then I'll come back and I'll do another podcast, and I'll tell you the whole story in detail. I'll tell you what I found, and then I'll also tell you where you can go and see the actual results. So it's not just me telling a story on a podcast. I'm going to create a page where you can see the video documentation. You can see the instrumentation being documented properly. And you will know that this is not just some tall tale, that I actually did go out there and record this stuff. And the idea is that whatever I got that was extraordinary should be something that you could go out if you wanted to and find, you know, on your own, like reproducing it, peer review kind of thing. So, yeah, it's very exciting. I was excited about doing it, but I'm even more excited now that I've done it. It's going to take me, you know, again, a while to put everything together and put a little nice bow on it and hand it over so you can see it for yourself. Hopefully, I'll do it within the next couple days. So forgive me if I don't leave a new podcast tomorrow. If I don't, that's just because I am feverishly working on putting all this together into a presentation so that when I do my next podcast, you will be able to say, wow, that was really interesting. So anyway, that said, this podcast is always short. It's always free. It's called Joshua P. Warren Daily. I hope that you will subscribe to the podcast. If you just go to joshuapwarren.com, joshuapwarren.com, there's no period after the P, you'll find all kinds of cool stuff there, like my curiosity shop, where you will find things that you will not see anywhere else in the world, and I guarantee you of that. And they sell out all the time because it's like, you know, weird stuff, but like unique, handmade, custom stuff. But you'll find a link to the podcast there, and if you click the link, you can subscribe through various means or just follow me on Twitter at Joshua P. Warren, at Joshua P. Warren, and I will usually tweet when a new one is posted. So that's it for today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. Thank you for staying curious, and I will talk to you again soon.